Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, August the 16th. War Czar Douglas Lute started a renewed debate over the pros and cons of reinstating the military draft when he told NPR on Friday that it is an option that has always been on the table and that it makes sense to consider it. Does it? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lieutenant General Douglas Lute is the Assistant to the President and Deputy Secretary Advisor for Iraq and Afghanistan. He's widely known as the War Czar. He told NPR's Michelle Norris on NPR's All Things Considered on August 10th that he is concerned about the toll of war in Iraq and extended deployments are taking on U.S. forces.
Given the stress on the military and the concern about these extended deployments for an all-volunteer military, can you foresee in the future a return to the draft?
You know, that's a national policy decision point that we have not yet reached, Michelle, because
But does it make sense militarily?
I think it makes sense to certainly consider it. And I can tell you, this has always been an option on the table. But ultimately, this is a policy matter between meeting the demands for the nation's security by one means or another. Today, the current means, the all-volunteer force, is serving us exceptionally well. It would be a major policy shift, not actually a military, but a political policy shift to move to some other course.
Well, his comments certainly raised more than a few eyebrows and denials by the Pentagon. The Pentagon spokesperson says, "I can emphatically tell you there is absolutely no consideration being given to reinstituting the draft. The all-volunteer force has surpassed all expectations of its founders." Still, the debate goes on, and we will debate it this hour and talk about whether the military implications or consequences and whether this is even politically feasible at this time. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are happy to have with us Joe Greco, a professor of political science at Duke University. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. It's good to be able to join you on this this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. Has this, do you think, always been an option that's been on the table, a military draft?
I had not known that until General Lute made that point that in the administration or in the Pentagon that there had been such discussions. Every so often, members of Congress, as a way of highlighting the sort of recklessness of the Bush administration in using force, have suggested, like Congressman Rangel has suggested, the idea of having a draft to bring home to the American public what, in fact, would be the cost of having these extended deployments abroad and wars that go on 4, 5, 6 years. So this was the first I had heard, and I'm not sure how considered the general's response was, whether he was trying to duck and weave or if indeed he was talking about a conversation or a process that actually had been going underway. I suspect at present the Bush administration is not looking in that direction. I suspect that phrase on the table was sort of a boilerplate kind of phrase. I'm not sure. I haven't seen in other testimony indications of such serious planning, so I'm somewhat skeptical. It does raise all the issues that have been one sees in the blogs and in the commentaries on whether we should have a draft. At this point, I tend to think that that's not the direction the Pentagon wants to go.
Yeah. Do you think this was just a misspeak by Lute, that he just that he just said something that wasn't accurate, that he didn't even believe?
I suspect that he was surprised by the question. I was listening to your tape of it. Mm-hmm. I had not heard the original. I had read his mm-hmm. comments, and it seemed a little bit off the cuff. and not terribly well formulated. His main point was that it would be a major shift, which I would suggest. I had the sense he was going in the direction that shift isn't anticipated anytime soon. Oftentimes, people in these kinds of positions, when they're asked, would you consider using force in these circumstances, or would you consider using this sort of weapon, the default option is never to say something, never to put a limit on one's range of options. And therefore, the stock phrase is, all options are on the table. And I think he reached for that and employed it. The result, of course, is that people like John Edwards jumped on it the next day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember, I'm trying to remember if it was the first presidential campaign of now President Bush or a second, but I remember him having to deny and reject the charge numerous times that he was going to reinstitute the draft. Remember that?
I don't recall it too well, mm-hmm. and so I'll take your reporting on that. I don't see this as something that goes along with the way, for example, the Pentagon was moving in the first administration and up until 2006 with Rumsfeld, who was looking toward the development of a smaller but extremely highly trained, highly equipped military. There's only one reason why I can imagine the Bush administration thinking about the draft. I don't want to be alarmist, but the only rational grounds for the development of a draft would be to engage in some very large military operation, such as in Iran. Mm-hmm. But I just can't imagine, because I think Iran, for example, would require for a serious occupation force, not the initial destruction of an Iranian army, but any kind of reasonable occupation that would require a very large American force, perhaps 750,000 troops. That cannot be obtained except through a draft. So I suppose if I was going to look for it, what would be a contingency that would lead the Bush administration to start thinking about a draft, that's the only one I can think of.
Yeah. Well, this is a good time for me to ask you about that, even though it shifts our focus a little bit, since it is in the news so much. A lot of people are alarmed that the Bush administration wants to declare Iran's Revolutionary Guard a foreign terrorist organization. And some are saying this is the first step to a formal military action against Iran.
Yes. During the past year, there have been numerous actions undertaken by the Bush administration of a military sort. For example, the movement of naval forces closer to the Gulf or into the Gulf itself, public statements about the possibility of using force. Vice President Cheney gave a very strange answer during an interview in which he said it was asked, should the U.S. Attack Iran? And he said, for what reason? As though, give me a reason, I'll be happy to sort of support the option. There are these verbal signals. I suspect that the Bush administration top people periodically look at the possibility of some sort of large airstrike against Iranian nuclear facilities. They think it through two and three steps down the road, and I hope they recognize that there would likely be escalation to a true all-out ground war. And then two steps down that road takes the U.S. To military success, like in Iraq in the short run, but a terrible occupation problem in the medium term, requiring huge numbers of forces. When you think about with Iran with 72 million people, if only a tiny percentage, a half of 1%, one out of every 200 became resistors, that translates into a very large force, which would require a huge American occupation force. So easily, estimates can go up to 750,000. That cannot be done with a volunteer force. That's possibly where you end up in a conversation talking about the draft. I hope the Bush people recognize that politically that's not feasible. Yeah.
We're going to take a short pause here, invite callers to join in with thoughts and questions about whether or not the U.S. should consider reinstituting the military draft. There will be more talk about the U.S. moving to label Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist group and what that means coming up after 9 o'clock with Kathleen Dunn and her guest. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon on At Issue with Ben Marins, not just one, but two presidential candidates talking with Ben after 4 o'clock. Senator Joe Biden joins Ben from 4 until 4:30, and then Mike Gravel joins him from 4:30 until 5. So Ben's series with presidential candidates continues today between 4 and 5. We are talking with our guest political scientist, Joe Greco, professor of political science at Duke University, talking about war czar Douglas Loot and his recent comments that a military draft has always been an option on the table. We're looking at whether that is an option that should be on the table or not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. The Pentagon denying that this week, saying that the military, the all-volunteer military, is working wonderfully and that a military draft is not an option that's being considered. Ed in Appleton, hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, it's okay. It's Joy, though.
Pardon?
My name's Joy.
Joy, I'm sorry. Mm. The question that I have is I would think that facilitating a draft would bring us out of Iraq sooner. And I have an aside comment. I think there have been literally thousands of people in the streets in our country that are against the war, and if they facilitated a draft, I think there would be hundreds of thousands of people in the streets protesting.
Mm-hmm. Professor Greco?
The caller is absolutely correct. The reinstitution of a draft for the purpose of an continued extended occupation of Iraq would induce tremendous public outcry and would have exactly the effects that he mentioned. There would also be, in terms of politics, this would be the end of, certainly the Republican Party, were it to pursue a draft in order to have an extended occupation, let's say in the 150,000 troop range, which actually could probably be sustained, or let's say perhaps in the 120 range for quite a long time, and I suspect that's where the Bush administration is going. General Petraeus's recent comments about a 10-year occupation with U.S. forces there in some measure, he's probably thinking 120 for 3 to 5 years, reducing it slowly to 50,000 in the out years. That can be done with a volunteer force. However, it's probably would not probably produce the results that he anticipates. A truly successful occupation might be in the 250,000 range. I'm not sure a volunteer army can do that over a long period of time, and therefore, if the choice were continued effective occupation and a draft, I think the politics goes against it.
All right. Thanks very much, Ed, for the call. Bob in Wanakee is with us. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My question is, should a situation occur that would require a draft, we are in a different sociological situation in the military than we were 30 years ago. Would the draft be an all-male draft, or would it also include females as well?
Hold on, Bob, for your response, and let me bring in Chris from Milwaukee. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Good morning. That's exactly what I was going to say. You can't take my sons before you take your daughters. It's not going to happen without an Equal Rights Amendment. The draft is off the table. It was not going to happen. I'll put my body on the line. You can't take the boys and not the girls anymore. And they have to have an Equal Rights Amendment.
Is that right, Professor Greco?
Well, I don't know. I can imagine a registration of both males and females, and I suspect the two callers are correct that in the new sociological circumstances and cultural circumstances of the United States, where women volunteers to the military are in about as close to the front line or over the front line as one can be. There have been numerous female fatalities and casualties in Iraq as well as Afghanistan. My guess is that the legislation would have both males and females register and perhaps even be drafted.
Yeah. Thanks.
We're in a hypothetical, and again, this is part of it, and you can imagine how the political debate about that subject itself would contribute to a reluctance on the part of politicians in the Congress as well as in the executive to push this matter very far.
Yeah, but you mentioned like Charles Rangel and how he is pushing for some sort of a draft, and it wouldn't just be military, though, right? He would say you could join some sort of other public service.
I believe there would be options, yes.
Yeah, but you know, who thinks a draft would be a good idea? It seems to me that it's mainly liberals or Democrats.
Well,
because it would bring an end to them.
In looking over some of the blog conversation over the last couple of months on this subject, it is rhetorically, members who might be called part of the liberal side of politics are the ones who are raising it to make the point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're doing it because they really think that a draft is a good idea, but rather to make the point that well, this would be awkward for both President Bush and Vice President Cheney, given their experiences themselves with the draft in terms of avoiding it, then to say, okay, now let's have a draft for other people. But secondly, it raises the point that I think for Representative Rangel, there is a certain anger on his part that with a volunteer army, it may create a somewhat higher ease in the use of such forces by elite politicians whose own family members are not part of the military. That's his point. So I think he's making a rhetorical point than a substantive point. It's a reasonable point, in my view.
Yeah. And doesn't the military say that this would hurt the military more than help it?
Yes. This is what all the Secretary Gates, when he was up for appointment, I think was very responsive to the senior military leadership and other in his testimony, which was that the volunteer army is an extremely allows the military to bring in people that are extremely highly qualified, in very good health, very high levels of intelligence. Who therefore can be trained and taught to use extremely advanced weapons, basically. It's a very capital-intensive military these days, who are also motivated to serve in that capacity. A draft would bring in a very different sort of military instrument, and I think the top leadership doesn't want to go in that direction. Now, if they are told by a political leadership that you must go to a place like Iran, where it is simply not feasible to occupy that huge territory and a huge population with 150,000 or 200,000 troops, then as military professionals, I could understand a determination on their part that from a technical viewpoint, the only option would be a much bigger army, and that means a draft.
Patrick in New Glarus is with us now. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question is for your guest. I would like him to clarify what his position is regarding any intent of the Bush administration to, in fact, attack Iran. The assumption in your discussion was that there was some question as to whether it would be feasible militarily and that such feasibility would potentially drive the issue of whether a draft should be reinstated. Is it your position that feasibility is really the issue, and it's not a political or a moral issue. I'll listen to the answer off the air. Thank you.
That's a fair question. So as a matter of disclosure, I would say that I think an invasion, a land-based invasion of Iran would be a terrible mistake. And therefore, I think as some sort of air-based attack on the nuclear facilities of Iran would also be unwise because it might very well result in a larger scale war, which at the end of the road would require a U.S. occupation.
Yeah, and now you might think it is a mistake and unwise, but do you think the Bush administration is going to do that?
I don't know. Hmm. I think there is a temptation to do so on the part of, everything that Vice President Cheney has said has suggested that he is sympathetic to the idea of an airstrike against Iranian facilities, either by the Israelis or by the United States. Senator McCain's point language, the idea that the only thing worse than striking Iran with U.S. military power is an Iran with nuclear weapons. In other words, between two bad choices, he'd go for some sort of strike. I'm not sure how close or his thinking is, of course, ultimately to the president. President Bush has been pretty hawkish on Iran, although he says all options are on the table, but he hasn't issued a significant threat. But I do fear. In a sense, if Iraq had gone well, I suspect there would have been an even greater temptation. It could be that the president and vice president believe the U.S. has its plate full. But I still worry on some occasions that they may still have some temptation to do that.
Thank you very much, Patrick, for the call. Gary in Platteville is with us now. Hi, Gary.
Yes. I'm a Vietnam vet, and I was involved in the draft, of course, as everybody knows, during the Vietnam War. And I kind of take offense of saying that you're not going to get intelligent people during the draft. I was 2.5 years in college. Most of the people that I was involved with had college education. We were very fit. Most of us did enlist when you found out you were being drafted to pick your branch or field. I think the draft should be instituted because it brings a higher awareness to the public. You've got more at stake, even if your child isn't involved in the military. You're concerned of what kind of conflicts that your government is involved in, and it makes the leaders more accountable because these people are thrown into something that maybe they weren't interested in at one time. But if the draft is involved, it brings a huge awareness to everybody as to just how we're going to use these troops. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thanks.
Thank you for the call, Gary. Professor Greco?
Yes, I think there are two good points here. First, I would be careful, and I think I should have been careful about, because regarding what would be the IQ, average IQ level with a draft as opposed to without it, where I think I would stand on firmer ground. The all-volunteer force, according to the military leaders themselves, produces a combination of people with a combination of characteristics that they believe produces per soldier a much more formidable force. Highly motivated, very healthy, there can be very high standards with regard to tests and things like that. It's the combination of these characteristics that produces, on average, according to the military, a more formidable fighting force than through a draft, if you have a drafted army. Other examples would be the British Army, which again is a volunteer army, where on the per-soldier basis, they're extraordinarily formidable. Now, there are exceptions. Israel, for example, has an extremely formidable army. It's also a drafted army, there are special circumstances where there is in the culture and in society a high commitment to military service and a belief that there's a great deal of value and necessity to such service. So from the Army's viewpoint, though, they prefer to deal with volunteers. Second interesting point, though, made by the caller, is the risk. He's asking the question, and I don't know the answer to this. Are national leaders, or let me see if I can at least frame the question. It is, are national leaders more risk acceptant in the idea of using force when they have a volunteer army as opposed to a drafted army, a conscript army? And I can see arguments on both sides. I do agree that with a conscript army, a lot more families are affected. On the other hand, a conscript army, usually being a much bigger army, gives national leaders a lot more opportunity, a lot more options in using force. So I'm not sure where it comes down and what the net effect is. But I think the caller raises a good two issues.
Yeah, and thank you, Gary, for doing that. We will take a call now from James in Richland Center. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I don't believe the draft is really an issue at all. I think this administration will do anything it can to change the national discourse away from why we went to Iraq in the first place, and that was to control the price of oil. I also believe this administration does not want conscripts. Why would you want conscripts when you've got Blackwater? Why would you want to deal with the attention of the national media and the discourse of our population regarding a draft when you can go out and spend billions of dollars for mercenaries? And I'll take my comments off the air.
Is this a diversion? I think is the comment of Professor.
Well, I don't want to put too much weight on General Lute's comments again. As to sort of flying a trial balloon, or was this part of an attempt either positively to move towards a draft, or negative, or as an instrumental strategy to divert attention of Americans to other issues such as the motivation for going into Iraq. I don't think I want to put that much foresight or premeditation attached to General Lute's comment.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, I do think, though, I agree with the caller in connection to his first point, namely, there hasn't been much of a good conversation in this country, and there hasn't, notwithstanding our democratic institutions and congressional oversight and a free and vigorous media, I'm still puzzled as to why we don't have a good understanding as to the motivations of the president and the vice president in launching the war. I supported the inauguration of the war because I thought it was necessary to assure access by the U.S. to the Persian Gulf for oil resources, and I was always disappointed that the president and the vice president were not honest about that could be a legitimate U.S. interest. I'm thinking about Woodward's book and some other books that have come out on the war. They talk about the decision, once the decision was made to go to war, how to do it. But I agree with the caller. We don't have a good understanding of the initial justification or motivation.
Yeah. Before you, he also brought up something with the private contractors, as Paul in La Crosse also wants to do. So let me bring in Paul before you address that. Paul,
yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you're saying that what it would take to draft 100,000 people for the Army wouldn't replace two-thirds of the private contractors that we have in Iraq right now. That if we wanted, if we want to invade a country that's three times the size of Iraq with the same kind of force of Army and, our military and private contractors, we'd have to raise 250,000 men. And that, again, does not address what are we going to do for equipment, since most of the National Guard units right now in our country do not meet even minimum standards for a fighting force. where are we going to get the armor, the planes, the rifles, all of that that would be needed for the conscripts, for the private contractors, and just how big is this force going to be in reality? What will it cost us?
A war against, I agree with the caller, a war against Iran is probably would be bigger in scale than the war against in Vietnam. Not necessarily at the scale of World War II, but it would be a huge, huge war. If there were 75,000 Iranian resistors, and if you think that you need to have 10 U.S. troops for every Iranian resistance member, you're talking about 750,000 U.S. forces, whether they be regular military or contractors. That's 750,000 people. U.S. hasn't had that in the field. I guess you would have to go. Well, there was never more than 550 in Vietnam at any one time. So we're talking about a war bigger than Vietnam. I think the contractors are playing... I think the two callers are raising an interesting question. Are the contractors substituting for regular U.S. forces? Mm-hmm. I think the answer is yes, they are. They've become sort of a stopgap for example, the State Department uses them for protection, and other U.S. agencies do. And but that would not be sufficient. You couldn't hire enough people to go to Iran.
Yeah. We are talking with Joe Greco, a professor of political science at Duke University, talking about war czar Douglas Lute, renewing a debate over the pros and cons of reinstating the military draft in this country, when he told NPR recently that it has always been an option that has always been on the table and that it makes sense to consider it. We wonder if it does or not. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock, talking with a guest about the U.S. wanting to label Iran's Revolutionary Guard a terrorist group and whether this indicates a step toward military action. That's coming up with Kathleen Dunn and her guest after 9 o'clock. Just a reminder that only a couple of more days for you to sign up for a special event in Milwaukee on Sunday, August 26th at the Discovery World Museum. I'm going to be at this event along with Kathleen Dunn, Gene Peraca, and Ben Marins. It's going to be an afternoon on the lakeshore. And we will, you can join, Ben Marins and I are going to be on the Motor Yacht Voyager for a 2-hour Lake Michigan cruise starting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There's going to be a reception on land. There's going to be a lot of great food and tours of this museum. A wonderful listener event, and we hope that you can join us. You can get more information or order tickets by phone by calling 414-227-2047, 414-227-2047. There's also more information posted on our website, wpr.org. I hope you can join us for this special listener event on Sunday, August the 26th in Milwaukee. We are talking with Joe Greco, professor of political science at Duke University, about the pros and cons of a military draft and whether or not this should be an option on the table, as War Czar Douglas Lute recently said. And Jim in Suamico is our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking the call. Just wondered if Joe Greco knew that a way to more or less forward forecast if the draft's going to come back in is to watch funding of the Selective Service System, which currently lies dormant and is not funded, but it does lie dormant in each county as it had in the when it was active. It'd have to be refunded, reactivated. The time involved with that, I don't know if he's got any info on that, but I cannot believe you could just within 6 months start drafting people. You gotta watch what Congress is doing. If they start refunding that Selective Service System, then what you people are starting to stir the pot on today is possibly going to happen. if they don't refund it, it's not going to happen. I'll take the comments off the air.
Is there a connection there?
Oh, yes. The caller is right. There is a machinery, so to speak, throughout the country in terms of registration with local draft boards, then evaluation by those boards. Only the barest bones of such a system in place today. And so the caller is right. And this is where the Congress would first have an opportunity to speak, which would be in connection to funding an expansion of that system to actually institute a draft. So, yes, that is a good and useful point, that an advance indicator of whether there's something really serious on this matter would be the funding issue. Incidentally, I don't think a Democratic Congress would fund that such a bill.
Mm. Next is Phil in Fort Atkinson. Hi, Phil, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I fully support the draft. I feel that the best thing that could happen to America would be to impound people of all ages, of all sexes, of all orientations, and force them to fight these sorts of wars. And the reason is sort of obvious. If they had to fight them, they wouldn't support them. And the benefits that they now get from them, one of which is a booming economy and a huge surplus of labor taken out of the market, wouldn't be there. They would have to face the reality of what America is all about. And right now, I think if it came to a vote, you would still, despite the polls, see that most Americans could be convinced to continue support for the war, simply because Bush has already proven himself to be very adept at telling a string of palatable lies that people want to believe. The draft, however, cuts through that. It means that the war comes right into your home, whether or not the draft is actually successful. And by the draft, I don't mean young boys, the way the draft during Vietnam was instituted. I'm talking about a draft in terms of the age range that is now used to send National Guard and reserve troops, going all the way up to the 50s. I would love to see CEOs from some of the major corporations in this country pulled out of their suites and sent to Iraq or Iran. When they're 45, they're at the peak producing power, they have families, they have multi-billion dollar business operations, and the draft pulls them out. In winding up, I think if the draft comes, and I'm sure it won't, but if it does come, the first draft station should be set up at Harvard Yard and Bascom Hill. I think then we would begin to see at least the beginnings of symbolic equity in the suffering that war entails for the American public.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Krakow.
Well, this is the caller is making a very good, giving the case for national caution that would be induced by a very widespread draft, and it's possible that could happen. On the other hand, I would have to say I'm not sure that a draft itself always does the job. I think we should remember Vietnam occurred during a draft. Now, his point is, though, that it would not be a narrow draft just for young males, but it'd be a much wider draft, male-female, going from 18 to 55.
And, yes, CEOs.
The other side of that coin, just from a hypothetical viewpoint, because we're definitely just talking about hypothetical here, is at some point a draft army can undermine military effectiveness. And so from a national viewpoint, some trade-off has to be made between having a broad representative draft on the one hand and having a militarily effective draft on the other. I would be eligible for that draft under the conditions offered by the caller, and I know how limited my effectiveness would be in the military.
Yeah, and I think he's making the point too by setting it up here on the UW Madison campus, the the first sign up areas, that you wouldn't get an exemption if you were going to college.
Yes, and yes, if and I think there are conditions under which you could think of the draft being necessary, a World War II type threat. I mean, there are circumstances. I don't think we're facing a sufficiently big enough challenge to U.S. national security interests to justify a draft today, either in Iraq or Iran. And that's why I think that this particular discussion will. General Lute's comments, I have a feeling he wished he hadn't quite framed the way he did.
Yeah. Now, how is the, I thought I just saw some recent figures that the, maybe it was the Army, is meeting its recruiting goals again. While there was some problems in the past that people are signing up voluntarily.
Yeah, I think that was for 1 month, having missed it for the previous three. So I suspect these figures jump up and down every so often. But the total Army, again, keeping pretty tough high standards, is about 508,000 troops. And that's what, with that kind of, and there are about 180,000 Marines. With that force, it's the problem, I know that General Lute is, in fact, mentioned, the problem with having, let's say, 680,000 ground troops is that it is very hard to maintain 120 or even more so, 150 or 160,000 troops over a very long period of time without extending rotations, which has already occurred. So he, in this interview, I noticed the framing of the conversation about the draft was in the context of recognition on his part that the Army is very, and the Marine Corps, are very, very highly overstretched. At this point, they're doing 1 month abroad to 1 month at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, by comparison, the British practice is 4 months at home, 1 month deployment abroad. And so that is some sign of the stress that the U.S. military is under.
Yeah. Bernice in Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hi, you're on the
air. Hi. We should not have a draft. First of all, the people voted in the last election to end this war, and also they're tired of all wars for that matter. And the more soldiers we have, the more invasions of other nations like Iran, Syria, South Korea, we'll always find a fictitious reason to have a war. We always have in the past, and we'll continue. And when it will be when there's not enough soldiers that will end, stop the wars. We invaded Iraq for getting to control the price of oil, as Greg Palast said, and also to get control of supply of it. And Iran is part of the price of oil, and also, of course, profits from war, like Halliburton contracts. That's another reason for war, but it seems like we're going to dominate the world for our globalization.
Thank you, Bernice. We're running short on time. Professor Greco, she thinks if we reinstituted the draft, that would mean war on end without end.
Well, by itself, I don't think the draft means war without end. Although she offered usefully the counterpoint to the point made earlier by the gentleman who suggested that a draft would induce national caution. On the other hand, as this most recent caller suggested, it could also put in the hands of national leaders a much bigger force with more options for the use of such a force. I would wish to be cautious in at the end of the road, at the end of the day, having a draft or not isn't itself likely to have a huge influence on whether the U.S. gets into trouble. That's a function of the interests of the United States and also the wisdom of its leaders.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bernice. Patrick in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I feel that the average American citizen would have a higher sensitivity to a populace that we're occupying than the average person signing up voluntarily to join the Army, and thus that... That the standard way that the Army is right now is not being effective because our standard way of fighting right now is actually being an occupying force.
Did you follow that, Professor Greco?
I think armies almost always do a bad job of occupying foreign countries, especially whether they're draft armies or volunteer armies, especially when the country being occupied is composed of populations completely different in terms of culture, language, religion, and so on. I just don't think there's I don't think the draft would produce a better occupying force.
Yeah, and I think we have time for one more. Buck in Madison. Hi, Buck. You're on.
Ooh. Hey, time is short.
Yes.
I say to adopt the Republican motto: we should starve the beast. Fewer soldier bodies to invade other countries. What do you propose?
Yeah, but I don't know if you want to propose, but yeah, he's making, again, the if we don't have a draft, we won't invade Iran.
I think he's correct about that. I think that's one reason to have a volunteer force is it does put some physical constraints on the choices available to the to a president, assuming the president is being cautious and is thinking carefully about the consequences of his or her actions.
Yeah. How is, Professor Greco, the war in Iraq going right now, besides the stress on the military? Is that surge working as far as you can tell?
Well, I turned against the war because I thought the surge was simply not going to work, that at most it might buy time for President Bush to sort of wait out the clock for his time in office. I have not seen reasons to be optimistic about the surge. The violence has shifted away from the areas where there has been an enhanced U.S. presence. That presence cannot be sustained anyway. We're not seeing political reconciliation among the Iraqis. I think we're going to see trouble ahead.
Yeah, and you are saying, well, it would be unwise to strike Iran, but you're not so sure that's not going to happen?
I think it would be a terrible mistake to attack Iran. I believe there is some risk that the U.S. Top leadership is still open to the option.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Joe Greco, professor of political science at Duke University, talking with us about whether or not a military draft will be reinstated. Pros and cons of that. We thank him for joining us. We thank Leo Duran for producing this hour, and thank you for listening and for calling in. A reminder that for more information on the special listener event on Sunday, August 26th at the Discovery World Museum in Milwaukee, including the Lake Michigan cruise and the tour of the museum and the private after-hours reception and buffet dinner, you can go to our website, wpr.org, or you can order tickets by phone, 414-227-2047, 414-227-2047. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.